No one, said the Führer, had a greater admiration for the civilization which Britain had brought into the world than he had. It was like the Catholic Church, an essential element in world stability. All he wanted from Britain was that she should recognize Germany's position on the continent. Mr. Churchill replied,
XPD by Len Dayton, dramatized in 8 parts by Michael Bakewell. Episode 2, The House in Geneva.
Seems like our Mr. Bernie Lustig isn't around anymore, Billy. Seems like he's gone to Europe for an unspecified duration.
So who'd you talk with?
The guy who calls himself Max Preslow.
German?
He says he's Canadian. It must be one of those Red Indian names.
You don't like him.
He's a Nazi, Billy. I can always recognize him. He says he was too young to be in the war.
But you don't believe him.
He's got very black hair. When a guy's hair suddenly goes black overnight, he's old.
You want to go straight to the airport?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no time to lose. And you don't have to go to Switzerland, Billy. I'm going to have to go right now.
I don't like to see you worried, Dad. Is there anything I can do?
Nothing, Billy. It's just that I don't like what's going on here. Colonel Pittman's going to have to hear about it, and I never like putting this kind of thing in writing. And it's risky talking on the phone these days.
Looking forward to seeing the Colonel again.
I always get a real kick out of seeing him. You know, man, he's run out of time, you know. Great man, Billy, make no mistake about it.
Say, Dad, if this Colonel of yours was such a gung-ho hero, how come he ended up running some little quartermaster trucking battalion?
Don't ever let me hear you say anything like that again. Not ever. Think you'd have had your fancy Princeton education and your T-Bird and your Cessna and your yacht if it wasn't for the Colonel and what we risked our necks for back in 1945?
Jeez, Dad, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything.
It's time I told you about it, Billy. I'm not getting any younger than the Colonel's. Well, he's been a lot in my mind lately. Last night I dreamt about the time we stole those trucks.
What happened?
Well, it was my idea, Billy. I told the Colonel how we could fix the paperwork so we could make it seem as if 4 of the trucks containing the treasure could be documented as if they were taking rations to an artillery company right near the Swiss border.
Was it your idea, Dad? You never told me that.
I never told you half of it, Billy. Colonel Pittman was in town when our secret orders arrived from 3rd Army. Pittman was a major then. I was the orderly room corporal. A motorcycle messenger brought an envelope marked with a rubber stamp of Army HQ and plastered with secret marks. The guy in the bike wanted his receipt signed by Pittman. I couldn't tell him that Pittman was in town with a bottle of hooch I'd got for him and planning to make a young furline he had met that morning in the mayor's office. The battalion was on alert and ready to move. For being off base and fraternizing with a German civilian, he would have been court-martialed.
You forged his signature?
That's what orderly room corporals are for.
He saved his career, Dad.
And he saved my ass a few times, too, Billy. We made a good team. Hey, this is the exit for the airport. We better get a move on, or I'll miss the flight to Geneva and find myself changing planes in Paris or London somewhere. Come on, step on it. Good to see you.
Let me take your bag, Mr. Stein.
Thank you.
Your son phoned to say you were coming, Mr. Stein. The Colonel was resting, but I was sure he would want me to come out and meet you as I usually do.
Thank you, Eric. Where's the car?
We just had delivery, sir. The Colonel has a new Rolls every 5 years. Always white, always the same tow upholstery, tinted windows, stereo hi-fi, and telephone. He still has the Jaguar, of course. He prefers that when he's driving himself.
When's he going to change over to a Mercedes, Eric?
Well, the Colonel would never buy a German car. You know that, Mr. Stein. He sent the color TV back to the shop when he discovered that parts of it were manufactured in Germany.
Yeah, the same old tapes. Rango Reinhardt, always the colonel's favorite. And mine.
Any calls downtown, Mr. Stein? You want to go past the cake shop?
You know very well that Madame Meringue would never forgive me if I didn't stop off for a cup of coffee.
The colonel never goes there now. He says that coffee and cakes are not good for his digestion. The nut house, he calls it. Did you know that?
he was never much interested in food.
I wouldn't want to step out of line, Mr. Stein.
What is it, Eric?
I thought you should know that the colonel takes a rest every afternoon. That's why he didn't come to the airport.
Yeah. How long has this been?
Oh, some 3 months. The doctor brought a heart specialist from Lausanne and gave him a checkup last month. He told him he's got to go slow.
I see.
It didn't go over well with the colonel. You can probably imagine what he said. But he took the advice, just the same.
Hey, he's quite a man, the colonel.
You've known him a long time, Mr. Stein. It's just wonderful the way all you men from the same battalion kept up your friendships and put together enough money to finance a business together. It was some idea, Mr. Stein, a little private bank here in Geneva. How did you think of it?
I don't know. Oh, got a bit of money put by. One of the boys suggested it in fun, and then we considered it seriously. The colonel persuaded a retired U.S. Army general and some English lord or something to sit on the board.
Ah.
Now, he could charm the birds down from the trees. And the Swiss authorities were very cooperative with British and U.S. nationals in those days immediately after the war.
How long have you known the colonel, Mr. Stein, if you don't mind me asking?
I first met the colonel in 1943. He was only a lieutenant in those days, but he was the toughest son of a bitch in the regiment, I can tell you that.
We never see any of his family over here. It's a shame he never got married. He loves children, you know. He should have a family of his own.
The battalion was his family. He loved those men, Eric. Some of those dog faces, he was the only father they ever knew. Don't get me wrong now. There's nothing unnatural about it. The colonel just has a heart bigger than any man I ever knew. How long since the colonel was stateside?
Oh, not since he got out of the army.
And that would be about 1948. That's a long time.
Here is the nut house, Mr. Stein. I guess Madame Maureen will be tickled pink to see you.
Monsieur Stein.
Bonjour, Madame Maureen.
Why didn't you tell me you were coming?
I didn't know myself until a few hours ago. Here, I brought you a present. For my favorite girlfriend.
Anfini, you always remember Monsieur Stein. And now I bring for you the new almond cake. It's still warm, but never mind, I will cut it.
That's a great privilege, Madame Maureen. You never let anyone slice your cakes before they're cold.
Well, for you, I make the exception. Without you, there would have been no shop at all.
That's as delicious as always. You know, the moment I tasted those cakes in that place on the Rue de Rome, I knew you had to have your own establishment.
And now I'm giving the tea room to my daughter. Her husband works at a good restaurant in Zurich. They will both come back here to live.
Mm-hmm. Huh? That'll be nice for you, Madame Maureen. I can't imagine this place without you. What about all your regular customers?
Oh, I will keep my apartment upstairs and your room, too, that will be untouched.
Thank you, Madame Maureen. This is where it all began, you know.
Oh, I remember, Monsieur Stein. Your merchant bank in the room upstairs used to be a jeweler's in those days. And why don't you persuade your colonel to come and see me again? It's been so long.
I'll do my best, Madame Maureen. I'm on my way there now.
And take the rest of the almond cake with you. I have a box already. Perhaps the colonel would like a slice.
Merci beaucoup.
What do you fancy for a nightcap, Stein? Claret or burgundy?
The wine we drunk at dinner was delicious, Colonel.
Oh, we might be able to do better than that.
Why did you bring your hunting trophies down into the cellar, Colonel? They used to be your pride and joy.
Some of the boys in the battalion made jokes about them some years back, and I thought maybe they were a little, you know, ostentatious.
You always did set great store by the opinion of your men, Colonel.
Now, Hermitage You'll enjoy this one, I'm sure. It was the real flavor of the North Rhone. Make an interesting comparison with the Chateau Neuf du Pape we had at dinner. Come on, let's go.
Oh, hey, you okay?
Here.
Let me take that bottle, Colonel.
No, I get a little giddy sometimes. I've never fallen, but the light here is deceptive.
Oh, all these old wine cellars are the same. The steps wobble as you go up. You'll have to cut back on the Evian water, Colonel.
Here. Now taste that, Corporal.
Thank you, Colonel. That's good.
To the battalion.
To the battalion.
McIver, you say his name was?
Military police platoon. He was the lieutenant with
them. I just can't seem to place him somehow. And you went along to the film company and talked?
Like I told you, Colonel, they said that Lustig, the man McIver talked about, was away in Europe.
Yeah.
I spoke to a guy who calls himself Max Breslow. He says he's probably going to make the film.
What kind of man is he?
Not the kind of guy I'd want to share a seat with on a hang glider. I have a feeling they know something. I have a feeling they're going to give us a lot of trouble.
We already have a lot of trouble. I told you on the phone I was personally checking things at the bank. Well, I've checked them. And we are facing disaster.
Disaster? How do you mean?
The bank is in trouble. We're in conflict with the Kreditanstalt. Unless we can get them to change their attitude, it looks as if we stand to lose $100
million. $100 million? You're kidding, Colonel. Come on now.
I wish I was kidding, but I'm afraid we have been the victims of a monumental swindle.
$100 million? How in hell could we be chipped out of $100 million? We've got a highly trained and highly paid Swiss and German staff downtown.
The Kreditanstalt is the biggest bank in Austria, and it's state-owned. Now, they gave a man named Peter Friedman, that's probably a false name anyway, letters of credit for $100 million for 10 big consignments of pharmaceuticals, which were in the Zurich airport free zone. The documents say that Friedman was exporting these drugs from Holland to Yugoslavia, where the deal was to be handled by Interimpex, which is the Yugoslavian International Trade Corporation. Well, Friedman can't transfer the Austrian bank's letters of credit because they're not transferable. But he can't be prevented from getting money by assigning that benefit to someone.
How did we get into the act?
Well, our bank gave Friedman the money in exchange for that assignment of the benefits of the sales of the pharmaceuticals. A perfectly ordinary trading sequence. It could be very profitable, has been in the past.
Okay, Colonel, never mind the commercial. What happened next?
Friedman vanished. We checked the cases in the Zurich airport free zone.
Aspirin?
Well, not quite, but nowhere near as described in the shipping documents. Maybe worth $2 million.
Hell.
We are the victims of a carefully planned swindle.
Did they check with you, Colonel? I mean, before they paid out the money,
sure,
did they check?
Sure.
Now, you're in the bank almost every day,
yeah,
Eric told me.
They check everything with me. But this seemed like a gilt-edged investment with no risk at all.
Oh, what about references?
We got a glowing reference from one of the best banks in West Germany. It said Friedman had been doing business with them regularly over the last 8 years, and they gave him a first-class rating.
I don't get it.
Well, I've been on the phone to the president of that bank in person, a Dr. Butker. He says they have no record of such a letter ever having been sent. And furthermore, he says it's their policy never to give such recommendations.
And the letter? No, don't tell me.
Yep, it's missing from our files.
Hell. $100 million. Can we stand that kind of loss? I mean, what happens now?
I've been reluctant to let news of our trouble leak out, but I'll have to turn to the other banks to help us. We tried one of the big ones yesterday, and they turned us down flat. But that's not significant. We'll ride out the storm, Corporal. I'm convinced of it. Here, you want a cigar, Corporal?
Well, thanks. Losing $100 million will wipe us out.
Well, word will get around. Maybe the bank could sustain the loss, but lost confidence would make it very difficult for us to continue trading unless we find someone who will buy us out. Ah, there are the government guarantees and so on. So far, I haven't taken advice about the legal implications because I don't want to go spreading the story all around town.
Say $2 million for the cases of drugs in Zurich Free Zone. What else have we got in stocks and gold and stuff that we could sell?
Oh, maybe $750,000 U.S. dollars. I've been through our assets time and time again. Of course, if I sold this house, maybe I could put another million into the pot.
Next to that, Colonel, none of the boys would want to put you on the street. We all shared in the benefits, and we all have to share in the losses. I guess this is the end of the bank.
And it's my fault. I take a nice fat salary for looking after everyone's money. I just can't go on living in luxury after letting you all down.
Breslow kind of gave me a big hint that there was a lot of money around to buy the Hitler documents. Now, maybe we should sell them to the highest bidder. The sky is the limit as far as that stuff is concerned. Maybe we could save the bank that way.
No. Let's not jump out of the frying pan into the fire. At present, we're only short of money. And let's face it, none of the boys are paupers. Now, if we put those old documents on the market, we might find ourselves facing 15 years in jail. Now, I'd want to get a lot of legal opinion before we let anyone know what we've got.
Maybe you're right.
Now, you read all that stuff years and years ago. I can remember you sitting upstairs buried under it all. What's in them?
All kinds of junk.
Yeah, I remember you showed me one lot of documents. It was the minutes of a meeting. You were very excited about it at the time. You almost missed your lunch. Yeah, the pages annotated and signed Paul Schmidt in pencil. And you told me he was Hitler's interpreter?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember it. Führerkopie was rubber stamped on each sheet. You said it was the minutes of some top-secret meeting.
That's right.
Yeah. So what did you do with those documents?
It's better you don't know.
Yeah. Perhaps it is. Oh. What are we gonna do?
We'll have to find out more about these film people, Colonel. They could be very dangerous, but maybe they can be handled. I'm going to take a few documents back with me to California. I'll feed them some odds and ends and see how they react. Meanwhile, you follow up this trouble we've got with the bank. Maybe it's somehow connected with this Breslow guy.
Yeah. You know best, Corporal. You always have.
You look at that guy? Real cool.
What guy? What are you talking about?
A guy in the parking lot. I've been nosing around that green Cadillac for 5 minutes now, and I do not think his intentions are altogether honorable.
Well, you can see our black and white parked out there.
Perhaps it gives him an extra thrill knowing we're here.
How wrong can you get? He's coming in here.
What? Hey, sorry to bust into your mail, but I want to report a crime.
You want to report a crime?
Yeah.
I figured you're about to commit one.
It's the Fleetwood out there.
Yeah, we saw you looking at it.
Well, there's bloodstains underneath the boot and a kind of nasty sweet smell.
Yeah. Guess we better get up and take a look at it.
Look, the name's Willie Dawson. I'm having problems with the probation department.
I thought
that if you would have put in your report that it was me who found the body.
Come on, let's go look at the car.
So what'd they find? Who was in the trunk?
Well, somebody carved his head off, so it wasn't too easy to tell at first. Looks like whoever killed him was planning to run a car into the ocean with a body inside it. But they got spooked.
Oh, yeah?
He started to hack the hands off, but he ain't got very far. He left a wristwatch.
So who was it?
Well, the car belonged to a small-time movie producer named Bernard Lustig.
Uh-huh.
And the chambermaid at his apartment confirmed the watch was his. Now, he's been missing since May 23rd.
So it's homicide. What's it got to do with us?
Well, we checked out Lustig's office. We hit a lucky break. We got a report from a meter maid about a black Porsche parked outside the office on the 23rd and the 24th.
Yes.
The ticket she'd fixed on the previous day was still there when she added the new one on the 24th. And she noted the Illinois license plates. And the car belongs to a guy named Edward Parker. And he ran his name through the computer. The code indicated all inquiries must be cleared through the FBI. And the FBI thought we might be interested.
Edward Parker.
Rings bell?
Yeah, I know him.
We've been keeping an eye on him for some time. He's a small-time businessman. Mm-hmm. Travels abroad a lot. He's got a Japanese wife and lives in Toronto. He's a Russian.
Parker. And the CIA have positively identified the car as his?
Oh, yes, General.
And they know that the body belonged to this man Lustig?
Yes, General.
And Comrade Gretschko, what was his involvement?
Oh, he was not aware of Parker's action.
But he knew of the high priority attached to Operation Pogoni, to the affair of the Kazaruda papers?
Oh, he was fully briefed in April, General.
So he knew that this was an opportunity to blacken the reputation of Winston Churchill. That if Churchill and Hitler could have been seen conspiring together against Russia, we would have a major propaganda advantage in the Third World. And he has, in all probability, done nothing. Ah, Gretschko has been too long in the West. He's been corrupted by the soft pornography of the Californian lifestyle. He should never have been appointed legal resident. He lacks stamina. He is decadent.
Yes, General.
And the man Parker is such another. He shares his bed with some Japanese whore.
But surely the relationship had received the official approval of Moscow Center?
The man is depraved. But he is our man and we shall have to get him out. I wish to meet Gretschko and Parker in our embassy in Mexico City in 3 days' time. Please arrange it.
There is to be no discussion, Mr. Parker. Tas Pogoni has been compromised by the death of Lustig, and in so important a matter, we cannot afford to take risks. I have decided to pull you out. You have until the end of June to get your networks prepared for regrouping. You are to report to Moscow Center on July the 2nd.
In my opinion, Comrade General...
I did not request your opinion, Comrade Gretschko.
In my opinion, you are overreacting to the situation.
I shall be the judge of that.
Task Pogoni is no way put at risk by Lustig's death. We cannot dismember such a complicated operation just because...
Just because Parker's cover has been blown?
You don't have the authority to pull me out. I built up the network in Los Angeles, and I'm the only person who can judge the extent to which it's been compromised. My agents may well refuse to work with a new resident assigned by Moscow. You're casting aside relationships that it's taken years for me to build up. Well, only with the present network have we any chance of getting our hands on the Hitler papers. If you dismember the organization, we don't have a chance. And I don't need to remind you, General, how Moscow would react to our failure.
In the Ukraine, Mr. Parker, we have a saying, there are some nightmares from which the only escape is to reawaken. I would give you another month. It is against my better judgment, but I grant you another month. By then, I expect to see the documents on my desk in Moscow. And don't underestimate the British, Mr. Parker. For us, the documents are instruments of propaganda of incalculable value. For them, they are a matter of life and death.
And is that why they sent you down here, Hollis? Just because you know about the movie business?
Oh, I suppose they thought I might add a little authenticity. I used to work for a film production company in Soho. We never actually made any films, but I got to know all the jargon.
And what happened to the company?
It went the way of all film companies, I fear. Vanished without trace.
Don't you find embassy life a bit formal in comparison?
Oh, it has its compensations. Social life's not bad.
And you actually met this man, Breslau, when he was in London?
He was trying to raise money for a co-production. It shouldn't be too difficult to arrange to accidentally bump into him here.
What do you make of him?
He's a businessman. He's put together a couple of small productions in New York, using front money from Germany, and then sold them to television. Anyway, you'll see for yourself. I fixed an invitation to dinner at his place tomorrow. He thinks you represent a firm with money to invest in films.
Hasn't anyone put him on the computer?
Ah, well, that's something I'm not supposed to know about. But I'd say it's rather unlikely.
Why unlikely?
My briefing was rather circumspect, old chap. But I gathered that nothing is so far being communicated to our American friends. And we both know that anything that goes through the Bond computer will be known in Washington within 24 hours.
Have some more tea.
Thanks.
Where is Breslau getting his development money from?
He says it's his own. I think he's fronting for someone. I don't know what you're up to with this fellow, but I'd advise caution.
What do you mean?
Is, that your Porsche outside?
What a hope. Back in London, I spend most of my time on my back under a 1963 Aston Martin. What do you mean, anyway? What Porsche?
Well, I saw it at the airport when I arrived, in the hotel car park. Then yesterday, I saw it cruising slowly down Sunset Boulevard when I was talking to our pal Breslau.
Where is it?
Across the road. alongside the Pioneer Chicken.
Not exactly inconspicuous.
In this town it is. Look for yourself. The streets are full of Porsches.
Was it always the same man driving?
I couldn't manage to see who was inside, I'm afraid. I thought it was one of your people, to tell the truth.
Is that your green Datsun at the curb?
I rented it at the airport.
You got the keys?
Sure. Here.
Great. Here are the keys to my car. It's a white BMW with tinted glass. It's in the garage. You drive off along Palos Verdes Drive. You know where I mean?
Yeah.
It's 20-1 the Porsche will follow you. I'll come after you in the Datsun and try to get a look at him. Then we'll all keep going until we find a nice lonely stretch of road without any filling stations or McDonald's. We'll shake an explanation out of him.
No, depend on me. The Datsun's a rented car. Don't bend it.
I won't. If we lose sight of one another, just keep going with the Porsche and phone me tonight at the boat. Around 10:30, okay? Yes?
Is that Mr. Stewart? Mr. Boyd Stewart?
Yes, I'm Stewart.
Rampart Division, Los Angeles Police Department. Sergeant Hernandez. Traffic accident investigation.
What's the trouble?
You rent a BMW from City Center Rent-A-Car?
That's right. Where is it?
Right now it's being shoveled into the back of a dump truck, Mr. Stewart. When did you miss it? Are you still there, Mr. Stewart?
Was the thief hurt?
He sure was, Mr. Stewart. The gas tank exploded and made a fireball that scorched 3 lanes of the Harbor Freeway. And nothing left of him to identify.
In XPD by Len Dayton, Boyd Stewart is played by Trevor Nichols, Charles Stein, Bruce Burr, Colonel Pittman, Barry Morse, Schmuck, George Koulouris, Billy Stein, Ian Tyler, Loden, Bernard Brown, Madame Mowring, Mary Wimbush, Kalkoven, Stuart Milligan, Ivan, David Garth, Goretschko, David Sinclair, Hollis, David Lerner, Parker, Colin Starkey. XPD is dramatized by Michael Bakewell and directed by Peter King.